Okay. All right. Well, I thought it was, for what it's worth, I thought it was a very well put together film. But I'd be curious about some of the particulars about where the film used a little bit of poetic invention to make it a better, more interesting story. I think the thing that the only thing that stopped me, to be honest, was I mean, I was pretty much okay with pretty much all of it. And good writing, and very I love Stephen Frears. I've been watching his films for 30 years now, since I think Bloody Kids was the first one I saw. But I didn't and could not and still cannot to this day understand why anyone would offer. I understand, first of all, that the elderly Mother Superior, the one in the Irish nunnery, had passed away in 95, and she was gone when the story between yourself and Martin Sixsmith occurred. Is that true?
Yes, that is. Yeah, Sister Hildegard is. She's portrayed in the film, but she had actually died.
Right. Okay. But let's. So, but for the sake of the film, Sister Hildegard is there, and she's quite chastising and quite disapproving still in her dotage. And I just didn't understand the basis for anyone offering, forgiveness to the church for it having done what it did. And I certainly don't understand what Judi Dench was talking about when she says, "Oh no, it's not an anti-Catholic film." For me, it wasn't enough of an anti-Catholic film. And she said it was, it was about faith. I have no idea what she's talking about.
Tell her about retaining your faith.
I did retain my faith for a little while when I left the home after
Yes.
Anthony was taken away. I did kind of lose my faith a lot. Within myself, I do used to pray, but I stopped going to Mass and communion and the usual confessions and that. And for a very long time, the nuns did get me a job in Liverpool after I left Ireland,
Right.
and I worked in a boys' school for 2 years. And then I moved from there back down to town St Albans in Hertfordshire in London, and I took up nursing. Now, I did nurse psychiatric nursing for 30 odd years. And over the years, I was still quite bitter about Anthony going, and I missed him so much for years and years. All I ever wanted to do was to find him once he'd gone, and kept the secret, of course, my own fault in many ways. I kept the secret from everybody for 50 odd years. The only one that knew was my brother. He was about a year and a half older than me at the time when it happened. But of course, then once my father got me into the home, they didn't. They never came. Nobody came to see me. I was there for 3 years on my own, and I hadn't told my sisters because of the shame of it. I had two sisters. They didn't know where I'd gone, and no, my father said no. He didn't want to speak about me. I actually told some of the family I was gone dead. And
Really?
I moved down
He
to.
said you had died? Your father
Hello?
did?
Hello?
Yes, I'm right here. Hello.
Oh, sorry. I thought you were going to ask me another question.
No,
I took up the psychiatric nursing, and I did it for 30 odd years in the same hospital.
okay.
Over those years, I mean, I saw so many tragedies, so many sorrows, so many joys, that I was putting my own sorrows behind me and just went on to help other people as much
Right.
as I could in my life.
Right. But what was the basis, do you think, in the film? I understand that the film is something of an invention. What could possibly be the basis for the Judi Dench character, based on yourself, to offer forgiveness to that horrid little crone who basically made the call about, keeping the fact of your son's life and that he had been there himself, and just keeping all the information away from you? What possible basis could one forgive a woman for that?
I don't really know. I have forgiven. I couldn't have gone. I mean, if Anthony was alive today, he would have been 61 years of age. And I couldn't go through my whole life being bitter and regretful because, I mean, a lot of the nuns at the convent were nice, kind people. As a matter of fact, there was one nun, she was very good to me, and I wouldn't have had all the information that I've got today if it hadn't been for her, because she got me some photographs when she wasn't there. She's just seen me, and I've got a lovely little album. Other than that, I would never have been able to trace him. I'd have had nothing about him.
Mm-hmm.
But that was, I suppose, I don't know why she was like that. She was a bit of a as you say, and old crone, but she, I mean, there was, most of them were nice, but Sister Hildegard was, I don't know why she wouldn't tell him. He went over three times looking for me, and she wouldn't tell him. I don't know what the reason was about this, but of course in Ireland they're not bound to tell families about the adoptions and things now, whereas in England they have to tell after 8 when they come to 18, but in Ireland they're still not bound to tell anybody going looking for their families.
Well, the fund, the basis, as I understand it, of the church's, the Irish Church, Catholic Church's refusal, disinclination to share the information, is they feel, because the young mother doesn't deserve the consideration or the compassion of letting her know where her child is, her son is, not letting, you know, maybe perhaps allowing her some correspondence with him, perhaps allowing her, you know, maybe a visit someday, you know, something. And
apparently, in the document that was signed by my mum, Philomena, the nuns along the line promised the mother's anonymity, and that's what they use as an excuse not to give any information, because they promised the mothers that they wouldn't. But certainly in Mum's case, and in a lot of other cases, the mothers haven't asked for anonymity. So I think it's just an excuse that they hide behind, or certainly at the moment. I've heard that from a lot of people.
All right. Well, let me understand fully then. The film has you, of course, going to the States and driving around the D.C. and watching Martin. I've forgotten his name. What's wrong with me? Not Martin. Martin Short. It'll come back to me. Anyway, you guys, a lot of that didn't happen, right? You did not actually go to the States in actuality.
At that time, no, I didn't. No. It just started off with me trying to find him all my life. I wanted, and prayed hard to find him. So when I went home 10 years ago, and my brother said, for goodness sake, go back and tell your son and your daughter that I've got now. And I went back and told them. I hadn't told them. I kept the secret for, well, 15, nearly 56 years. Because at that time, we were so ashamed and so ashamed of what we had done. We were supposed to have done, committing mortal sins because we had sex aside marriage and had babies and what have you. So, I mean, that was the climate in those days. You were just, you wouldn't dare. I didn't even tell my two sisters. They didn't know where I was. They thought I'd vanished off the face of the earth. So we kept it a secret all our lives. And then when I went back and told my daughter, which straight away, she started, she said, Mom, he's our brother, and we've got to try and find him. So that's my one thing I wanted to do the whole of my life, was to find him and find out what happened to him. I knew he'd gone to America, because I'd signed him away to America. But I was desperate, and I was coming to 70 years of age at that time, and I thought, my God, before anything happens to me, I must try and find out what happened to him. And of course, I was over 10 years. I'm now in my 80th year, but I mean, my daughter straight away started working on it, because I'm not very au fait myself with the internet. So she started, and she tried Adoption Ireland, Adoption America, Adoption here, and but nobody, we couldn't get anywhere. And after about a year and a half, a friend of hers went to a party one night who met Martin Sixsmith. And she knew Martin Sixsmith. We didn't know him, of course. And she said, well, my friend has got a very good story. Would you be interested? And he said, no, I only do political journalism. I don't do Facebook. So anyway, as I say, he said, well, I'll meet Jane and we'll take it from there. And they took it from there. That was over 10 years ago. And he worked on the book on and off for 10 years. And I only told him my story as I remembered it when I was there in the home, and I was a young teenager and a young going into 18. But I didn't, at that stage, didn't know the first thing about Catholic. We were brought up as Catholics, and I went into a home where my mother died at 6. That was run by nuns as well. And it was all Catholicism. And I believed every single, well, we all did, everything you were taught about the Catholic religion, you believed it, firmly believed it. And I left there at 18. I left the home at 8, and then I left, and then about 6 months later, I became pregnant with Anthony. So everything we believed. Now, it's only when Martin started writing the book and started looking into the book, he found out all about the church being involved. I didn't know any of this in my day. I mean, none of us did. We were just young, innocent girls, really, I suppose. Not innocent, I suppose, but we were innocent. And I didn't know on anything until I read the book myself. this was came out in 2009.
Right.
But I mean, I didn't know so much about anything at all about that. We just went along with what the nuns taught us and what we believed, what they believed, and what we thought. So, is that any help, or what do you think?
Just looking back at the circumstances when your son was born, do you think that is there any way that if the Catholic Church had not intervened, if you had not turned to them, if you had been more or less on your own, do you think that somehow, you know, things might have worked out with your son? You'd be able to care for him? Do you think if things had gone a different way?
Well, there was, in those days, there was no way. I mean, I tried everything. I used to beg them to try and find me a job outside of the home where I could take him with me and have him with me and rear him myself.
Right.
But, of course, that was an impossibility because, as I say, my mother died when I was six, and there were six of us, there were three boys and three girls, and Dad kept the three boys at home, and three girls were put into the home in a convent school, it was. So, therefore, I don't know how I would have managed that answer. Now,
right.
But all I ever, at that time, all we ever wanted was to try and find a job outside. But there was no way. They said, "No, you can't leave here until you actually get your baby adopted." That's what we were told. One girl tried to do it, and she went out after 6 months, and she came back in, and they kept her there for a good. I think the child was nearly seven before they did anything about it. But there again, I don't know too much about that. We didn't know anything about any of the other ladies because we were all given different names. We never spoke because we were too ashamed. We never spoke about our homes or our families and that to one another because we just, as I say, we were so ashamed of it all. Really, haven't done with. I mean, we firmly believed we really had committed a bad crime. So I would have given anything to be able to take him out somewhere, find a job. As of course, jobs in those days were just go to work for some domestic family or something and do domestic work.
Right.
But there was no way. And as I say, with Anthony, how he was adopted, it came about that the lady that adopted him didn't really want a boy, she only wanted a little girl. And she had picked out because the mother had some family, the mother had a brother who was a priest, and he said, "Well, I know a home where you can go," and she came over with a brother from, he was on his way to the Vatican or something, they called into Roscrea. He said, "I know a home in Roscrea, and there's lots of children there you can have." And so she went and she picked out Mary, the little girl that went with him. And of course, Anthony was, at that time then, Anthony and Mary were always playing together. And when she went to see the little girl, she picked out Mary and Anthony was with her. And then again, she went back looking again. And of course, when she went to pick Mary up again, Anthony was still there playing with her and with her. He followed her everywhere, I suppose. And he was 3 and a half and Mary was 3. And of course, she said she just couldn't, the way he just waved goodbye and tried to kiss her goodbye. And she said it just went to her heart and she phoned her husband in Missouri. He said, "Well, bring him along." And so that's how he was adopted, just like that. But she only really went because she had three boys of her own, you see, and she only wanted the little girl. But because she saw Anthony there with Mary and all the time, they were always playing together and whatever. And I never knew any of all this till the story came out. I found out all this story because she left diaries, the mother left diaries, which Martin got hold of, and all this was in it, you see. So he went off, and that's why I think, in a way, because she went to pick, and he went off so quickly. Quickly in the end.
Right.
So that was it. I don't know if this makes any sense to you, does it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, fully. Can I just ask, I know that in the film, your son, known as Martin Hess in America, did go out and seek to try and find some connection to where he came from and went back to the convent. Did that actually happen in real life also?
Yes.
Right.
Yes, he went back 3 times to the convent. On the third occasion, when he knew he was dying, he went as well, and they still wouldn't give him any information.
So he tried three times to find out.
To Hildegard, that he was abandoned at 2 weeks old.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
Yes. she told him that I'd left him at 2 weeks old and they had reared him. Yeah. But I worked in the laundries for 3.5 years and reared him. And this was the awful part of it. And when you think he died thinking I'd abandoned him.
Yeah.
And we met his Martin during the writing of the book, and the end of the book, Martin had met the partner, his partner, and he came over to London. We met the partner in London. That's where we got an awful lot of the information, because the partner brought us over a lot of information when he was growing up and when they were together for 15 years. So that's how we found out so much of the information.
Right.
But he said, even then when he came that day we went to see him in Martin's house in London, he actually believed that I had abandoned him until he found out that I'd stayed there in the convent for 3.5 years and had to work in the laundry for 3.5 years. So we just took it in our stride, as I say, with each one. When after 8 weeks when your baby was born, somebody got the laundry, somebody got the kitchen, somebody got the garden, so I got the laundry, so there I worked for three. But I mean, I think he was a bit amazed that he realised that I had reared him for 3.5 years.
He was also very saddened by that as well, and also this is Anthony's partner, he was very upset and angry when the first time we went to the convent and nuns wouldn't give us any information, because Anthony had paid a lot of money to be buried there, or given a big donation to the church to be buried there. So I think his partner was a little angry at that point that they hadn't told us anything, but likewise they hadn't told him anything. And I still don't understand what their motivation for it is. So it's just one of those things we'll probably never have answered, because Sister Hildegard's not with us anymore.
I guess the question I had before about forgiveness is, I understand that it is healthier for the emotions, for the soul, to not get hung up on feeling resentful or angry or hateful about some awful wrong. But I guess I understand that, and I think you have to let things go, saying you have to move on. But I think there's a long way between that and actually offering, you know, forgiveness, which is a way of saying to the person, what you did is understandable and okay, and don't worry about it, and you're okay with me. I just could not ever offer that. I could be okay with it and just let it go. I could move past it, but I could not. I think some things are just not forgivable. I just don't think it's that's horrible.
See, I agree with you. I'm the one that doesn't forgive, and I'm quite angry, and I know that Steve Coogan took a lot of my anger and put it into his character of Martin. I think, as Mum said earlier to you, she doesn't feel bitter at all, and she does forgive, yeah.
Yeah.
And they got him a good... At least he went to a very good home. He was very highly educated, and he was a very clever young man. As I say, the way he ended up in the White House, and unfortunately, when I did find him after all the years, that he had passed away, and... which was very hard, really. But he died in 1995, and many a time while he was going to Ireland, I could have just got on the plane from Luton and be an hour over there in Roscoe. But he was buried there 9 years before I found it.
Yeah.
Never knew he was buried over there at all.
Right.
Nobody, they didn't tell us, they didn't get in touch with us. And over the years, you see, when I left the convent, each place I moved from, they got me a job in Liverpool, then I moved down to the hospital, and each address, I sent it to Roscoe, but never, ever, ever got any answers back. I said, if ever he was looking for me, I would be here at such address. And when I got married after 6 or 7 years after leaving Roscoe, and I gave him every new address, but I never, ever, ever got any answers. And then we rang up in the end of the late 70s, they said, oh, well, the children are not there anymore.
Right.
There's nobody there anymore. It's turned into a school for, was it handicapped children, I think it is. And I think then they said, well, all the records were moved down to Cork. So then when we found out that, we went to Bourne Cork. And the nun that answered, she said, oh, yes, we have got some information. And I thought, for goodness sake, oh, how lovely. I thought, oh, thank God, we have some information.
Right.
When I phoned her up and she said, but get back to us on the phone, who's with you? And I said, my daughter, that's marvellous, you found him, have you found him? Oh yes, but I'm very sorry to tell you he's dead, she said, just like that. And of course I went to bed.
Yeah, that bit is different from the film, in that we were actually told over the telephone that he'd died.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And finding that out on the internet. What we did actually find on the internet was his headstone, right, which had lots of information. Well, it said that he died in Washington, so of course we Googled his name, right, and Washington, and that's when we found out more information about him.
Philomena, has there, did you ever have any contact with the father of your son?
Oh, no, you see, you know, the story is true. What has happened was I'd left the convent school, yeah, very green, actually. Mm. I didn't know anything about sex in those days. I mean, the nuns, they left me, they never spoke about sex, never knew what the facts of life were or anything. Mm. So I left there, I went there at 6 and left at 18. And I went to live with an auntie in Limerick, that's the Limerick city. And so I was with her. She took me one night to a big carnival that was on in, I'd never been to a carnival my whole life, been in a convent school and not. So I was so, it was so lovely to see everything, and it was so enjoyable, the lights and everything. And then I met the father of Anthony, John was his name, John McInerney. Mm. And so I did, you know, I didn't know what it was all about, did the deed that night, and didn't even know what it was all about, didn't know I was pregnant. And about 3 or 4 or 5 months afterwards.
Week later.
Yeah. Oh, yes, I'd arranged to meet him the following week.
Mm.
And I was still living with the auntie. And of course, I said to my auntie, well, I'm going to meet him the following week. We're going to meet up again. And she said, oh, no, you're not, she said. And of course, you wouldn't answer your elders back in those days. I said, but I promised to meet him. I'm going to meet him again next week. And she said, no, you're not going out. And she locked me in. And she gave me quite a one across the face. She hit me across the face. And she would not let me go out. So that's the point. I never, ever, ever again, whether he turned up or not, but I didn't turn up because she wouldn't let me out. So I never, ever, ever met him again.
It's conceivable that he's still with us and that perhaps he read the book or seen the film. It's possible, right?
It certainly is possible. And when the book was being written, there was, like, we put notes out on the internet and called every one of that name in Ireland, but they weren't the right person, so we really don't know. There were some guys of that name that sort of moved to Canada and places like that, so he could be anywhere, but he'd probably be the same age. I'd be in his 80s now as well.
He would, so yes.
If he's still with us, but certainly hasn't been in contact.
You know, it's funny, I don't think that that people, particularly younger people, can understand the attitudes about sexuality and about how it was pretty forbidden and pretty horrible if you had in the eyes of the authorities and in the eyes of conventional wisdom for to have had sex outside the bonds of marriage. There are two quick stories. One is my mother was born. She came along. Her parents had to get married because, well, they were going to get married anyway, but they hurried it up because my grandmother became pregnant with my mom. And my grandmother felt somewhat ashamed and somewhat resentful on some level of my mother because she was the reminder of her wanton, lustful nature or something. And she never really was that close to her. My mother believes because it was a part of this, this feeling that she had done something really wrong by not getting married first. And I think it's very hard for anybody to understand, but that kind of, those kind of attitudes. And
yeah, it's very sad. It's sad, isn't it, when that happens?
It's so sad. I think if my mother had been alive, of course, she was supposed to be a very nice, caring woman as well.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't remember much about her, but I was only 6 when she died.
Mm.
But I think she would have taken me home and looked after me, but of course my dad wasn't interested. So, and of course, it was classed as an awful thing, really.
Mm-hmm.
People today, and young people today, just can't believe that what we did go through. But, I mean, it's very hard for them to believe because life is so different nowadays for younger people. I mean, they can keep their babies and they get help with their families and everything else, you know. So it's very, very hard. And I can understand, like, your mother and your grandmother, I can understand that as well, too, you know. But as I say, my one heart and soul was to find Anthony, you know, after he went, because I absolutely adored him. And, you know, we had a good rapport between us, loved when I could get to meet him and do things for him and that. But as I say, I can understand how your grandparents felt about it, you know. So,
you know who just died is Phil Everly of the Everly Brothers. Remember the Everly Brothers?
Oh, yes.
Yes.
And Phil, and they wrote that song, Wake Up Little Susie. Listen to the lyrics today.
Mm-hmm.
They're terrified that their friends are going to find out that they stayed out too late. Probably.
Exactly. Exactly, you know. But can you understand, young people can't understand it today, and they can't come to... But that was the life at that time. That's what we were brought up so strictly and so, and we just went along with everything we were taught. I believed every single thing. Yeah. And it's only, as I said before to you, it's only when Martin wrote the book that I realized, I didn't know the first thing about the Catholic Church being so involved. And I mean, all we knew what the nuns taught, and that was it.
Right.
Just went along with it. And they helped, as you say, helped me. And where would I have gone? I don't know where I would have gone without the nuns' help at the time. You know, and I haven't, I'm not anti-Catholic. There's no way am I anti-Catholic.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, everybody's their own beliefs, and I firmly believe every, let the people believe what they want to believe.
Mm-hmm.
I just, within my heart, I never down deep, but I just didn't go to the outward signs, like Mass, Communion, Confession, of course, I didn't go to after about a year when I'd left the home. I thought, you know, I was so bitter at the time about it all, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you couldn't expect me to forget him after 1 year, after years even. I've never really forgotten him. So,
what do you think of the new Pope?
Hello?
What do you think of the new liberal-minded, very humanistic Pope in Rome now? Have you listened to what he has said? He's very different than the previous popes.
Yeah, I'm quite in agreement with him, actually.
Mm-hmm.
I believe a lot of things that he does believe in. He's very, he's more, he's down, gets down with the people and gets on, you know, he's more down to the ordinary common. Whereas the Vatican were always a hierarchy within themselves and they just, but now he's more for the people, I think, and that's what I think anyway, you know, thinking about it. And he gets down and he gets out and about among the people in front of you.
I used to work for the Franciscan Catholics in a downtown Los Angeles thing. And I
got you?
And I got to know them a little bit, and I relate to the Franciscans because they're much—they're a little more simple and pure of heart, and not, really sweet people. I just like their community, and I just you know I felt that I learned something about working for them.
Right.
You know,
anyway. Yeah. As I say, it's everybody what they want to think. I'm a firm believer in let people think what they want to think.
Right.
I know there's been a few. Things about the film and what have you, but I did not set out, all I set out in the beginning to try to see if Martin would find him for me. I'm not anti-Catholic, I'm not anything, you know, I still have my religion, I still go to Mass now.
Okay.
About 10 years ago, just before that I told my daughter Jane about it, I thought, I've got this feeling within me that I think I'll go back to Mass. I think I'll go back to, you know, my church again. I mean, outward, like go back to Mass, but I don't go to confession or communion or that.
Okay.
But, and it was around this time then that my brother said to me, will you go back and tell your daughter? And that's when it all came out. And as I say, I didn't know anything about religion hierarchies and that, but I think this Pope is going to be good for the Catholic faith, I think. I think it's going to be good anyway. What I think, maybe, I don't know, that's what I think, personally think. And I think he would be good, and I think he would be able to clear up a lot of damage that has been done in the past. I don't know.
I'm guessing that Mr. Coogan and Mr. Pope invented the bit about Judy Dench's character loving Martin Lawrence movies. I take it that's not taken from real life?
Big Mama's House. Loving Big Mama's House.
Oh, Big Mama's House, is that it?
Yeah, they did invent that bit, yes.
They did, invented, yeah, they did.
Do you have any particular likes in movies, films that you have seen that you're a fan of, other than this one, of course?
Oh, me, I'm the old-fashioned, the old black and white movies and what have you, you know, the old comedies. I'm not into modern stuff.
You saw Gatsby recently, you like?
I like The Great Gatsby, that sort of thing. You know, I like the, you know, something with nice. I've just saw Beyond the Candelabra.
Mm.
Saw that one. That's
Behind the Candelabra. You saw that? The
I did. I saw it coming over here on the plane this time.
Ah.
And we saw The Butler. I saw The Butler.
Yeah, you enjoyed
The Butler. Yeah.
I enjoyed The Butler as well. Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
I do like the movies. You know, I've always liked the movies because my brother actually owned the cinema in the town where we come from. So when I was younger. After we left, we used to get in for free to all the movies.
Right. Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
Well, my favorite film this year is The Wolf of Wall Street, but I have a feeling that's probably not your cup of tea.
I haven't seen it, but my daughter's told me about it. I haven't seen it. That's, what's his name?
Leonardo DiCaprio.
No, I haven't seen it, no.
Yeah. It's kind of a raucous comedy, but it's also a metaphor about the flamboyant and kind of diseased behavior of the very rich in this country.
It's pretty fun. No, I haven't seen that one, no.
Yeah. Well, it's awfully nice speaking with you, Philomena. I really appreciate you taking the time.
Yeah, I hope I've been some useful. Thank you very much. I hope I have anyway.
No, you're very very helpful and I think you're quite a woman. I'm very admiring of you.
I don't know so much about that. I'm just a simple person, really.
Okay.
You know, as I say, it's only since all this has hit me so much. I mean, I led a very nice, quiet life until all this hit me. But anyway, we're making the most of it. I mean, I'd never been to New York until this time. You know, we went here in November, I think it was, and then we came over here to Los Angeles again. And then we got, on the Friday, they phoned us, we would come over on the Saturday, so there was no way I could.
Uh-huh.
I've got my present husband, he's registered blind, so I had to arrange all that before I come out.
Right.
I tell you, it was quite hectic.
Mm.
But anyway, as I say, my family, they're all supportive in Ireland, and I'm remarried into a very big family, and they're all very supportive, you know, so.
The one time I was in
Ireland. It's only my immediate family, my daughter and son, that knew about the story.
I visited Ireland in 88, and I got to, I stayed with the Ryan family in Knocklong, which is not too far from Cork and Limerick.
All right.
Where is your town located? Where's?
It's actually, it's County Limerick. Have you heard of Tipperary?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. Well, Ross Gray is in Tipperary, the home where I was in.
Okay.
And then move up about an hour and a half later, it's Limerick City.
Right.
Might have heard of that, no?
Mm-hmm.
And I come from a town outside Limerick City. It's a new town called Newcastle West, County Limerick.
Okay.
But most of my life I was reared in Limerick City itself, because the nuns did give us a good education, and, you know, those nuns, they were the Sisters of Mercy. They were a different order of nuns to the ones in Ross Gray. And we did get a good education, but as I say, they left us, a lot of us go out into the world with not knowing the first thing about facts of life. Yeah.
I had the nicest encounter with a traffic policeman in Cork once. I was parked in the wrong area on a boulevard, and instead of coming up and giving me a ticket, he came up and said, excuse me, do you think you might be staying here very much longer? And I said, well, I don't have to. Are you telling me I should leave? I said, well, I think you might want to, because, you know, it's not legal to park here. You might want to be moving on. Okay. Well, thank you.
That is the Irish for you.
I love that. See, I never had a U.S. cop ever been as nice about that ever. So that was the nicest thing.